All right, how you guys doing this morning? Okay, there's a few more people here this week than there were last week, I've noticed, okay? Today we're in part six of our series as we go through kind of a quick flyover of the book of what we consider the book of Matthew, which Matthew, by the way, what we call the book of Matthew is actually just a document written by a guy named Matthew, all right, who followed Jesus around for about the last 3 years of Jesus's life. And so he just documented all this stuff. And at one point, at the end of Matthew's life, or actually after Jesus's death, he compiles everything together and he creates this document of just, hey, this is what happened with Jesus. Now, remember, as you're reading Matthew, he's not necessarily trying to write in chronological order, meaning here's the story of Jesus. Yes, he starts at the beginning, Jesus's birth, and then he's going to end, of course, at Jesus' death, but in the middle, everything that happens is kind of mixed up. He's just kind of listing this happened and this happened and this happened and this happened. But I feel like if you've been here for any amount of time, over the last few weeks, as we've been going through this series, we've kind of got the gist of the beginning of Jesus' life. Okay, we've watched Jesus go public and kind of go to people and tell people about who he is and what he's there to do. He's about 30 years old at this point, and he's been a carpenter all of his life. And so he leaves home, heads out into the middle of nowhere, gets baptized by this prophet guy named John the Baptist, who's kind of weird in and of himself. And then Jesus spends over a month by himself in the desert. And then after that, what we see is Jesus heads north, and he goes home to the region of Galilee, which was kind of the northern region of Israel, and he goes really first to his hometown called Nazareth, and in Nazareth, those people who he grew up with completely reject him as being sent by God. In fact, they try to kill him. And so what Jesus does is he goes to other towns. One of the main towns that he went to frequently is this town called Capernaum. In fact, this town kind of becomes Jesus' home base for the next 3 years of his life. And when he gets to Capernaum, he does kind of what he always does. He goes and he starts healing people who are asking for help. And he's teaching people. And he's doing his thing. And crowds upon crowds upon crowds of people came to watch Jesus. Now, these crowds aren't just crowds coming from town. Like, they come outside their houses. They're leaving their houses. They're going to go see what Jesus is doing on the other side of town. No, these are crowds from the entire region is kind of a magnet to Jesus. In fact, at one point, Matthew tells us in Matthew chapter 8 that a Roman officer sends some Jewish guys to ask Jesus for a favor, which is not something that a Roman man would really ever do in that time period. In fact, it turns out that this Roman officer had a servant who had gotten paralyzed somehow, and he was in extreme pain, and he was about to die. And so probably because this guy was Roman, he probably thought he'd have better luck of Jesus granting him his wish or helping him out if he sent a bunch of Jewish guys to go ask Jesus for this favor. And so that's exactly what he does. Jesus, I imagine, is kind of out in the streets doing his thing. He's teaching people, showing people about what God is actually like, and sees Jewish guys, a small group of guys come up, and they're like, hey, Jesus, we got a question. Hey, could you come to this Roman officer's house, and can you heal his servant? Because he is about to die. Like, it's happening. Like you got to come, like, now. This is kind of an urgent thing. And I'm sure many of the people in the crowd, as they hear this and they hear the ask or the favor, I'm sure many of the Jewish people are not happy that Jesus would even entertain the idea of going and helping a Roman, let alone a Roman soldier. Because if you remember, at this point in history, Rome was the oppressive foreign government who was doing terrible things. Soldiers especially were doing terrible things to Jewish people. And so they can't believe that he would even consider this. And these Jewish guys are like, yeah, but this one's a good guy. Can you go help this guy out? And everybody's kind of waiting there as there's a pause, waiting to see how Jesus is going to respond. What is he going to say? Is this his turn? Is this his time to like this is the perfect moment for him to come up and say no, you know, and kind of and bash Rome and put Rome down. And you know, they think that he might become the future king someday. So like this is all political to them. And so this seems like the perfect opportunity for Jesus. But Jesus says, sure, I'll go. And he went with them. And so one of these guys runs on ahead And he gets to the house first, about 10 minutes, I don't know, ahead of Jesus in the crowd. He's got this crowd following him, so it's kind of slow going. But Jesus is on his way, and one of these guys runs ahead, and he tells the Roman officer, he's like, guess what, dude? I just got you an appointment with Jesus. Like, he is coming here. Like, he is on his way here. He'll be here in about 10 minutes. Like he is coming to your house. I cannot wait for you to meet him. It's going to be awesome. And he is going to heal your servant. He's not going to die. Jesus is on his way. This is about to be awesome. We're going to see this with our own eyes. And when the Roman officer hears this, the Roman officer is like, wait, what? He's coming here? Why would he come here? What a waste of his time. And so he sends the guy back to Jesus and with a message that before Jesus gets to his house. And this message, he says, Jesus, don't bother walking all the way to my place. Just say the word wherever you are. Like, you help those people. You just say the word and I know my servant will be healed. And then that's all good. And when Jesus hears this message from the Roman officer, his jaw drops. He is stunned. Jesus is shocked. I mean, think about that for just a second. God of the universe, Matthew says, is amazed. He had never seen anything like this before. He is amazed at this man's faith. He turns to the crowd that's following him and he says, I have not seen faith like this before in all of Israel. Right? And so think about that statement for a second. I mean, he's calling out kind of the crowd, but he's also kind of calling out his disciples like Matthew who are there. You know, like, you guys don't even have faith like this guy. And this guy's a Roman guy. This guy is one of the so-called enemies of the Jewish people. And so he turns to those Jewish guys, turns to the messenger, and he says, hey, that servant, by the way, he's healed. You can go back home. It's all taken care of. And the crowd goes wild. That was the kind of stuff that kept happening with Jesus. Remember, the Jewish people had been waiting for hundreds, technically thousands of years for a savior. And the whole Old Testament points to a savior that God was going to send to the Jewish people who are going to come and fix their sin problem and is going to be their king. And so they've been waiting for generation after generation for that guy. And Jesus shows up and he begins telling people that he's the guy, that he's the one. And he's teaching people and he's healing people. I mean, he's doing things that are just simply impossible for any normal human to do. And crowds follow him everywhere. In fact, the people of Capernaum, they love it. I mean, things are going so great for them. It's working out quite well for them. Okay, because people from all over are coming to Capernaum to see Jesus, like the entire region. I mean, people are flocking to Capernaum, and so the mayor's happy, the businesses are happy, and yeah, traffic's a little annoying, but it's great for the town, you know? And so they're like, hey, Jesus, the people of Capernaum, they're like, hey, Jesus, why don't you set up home base here? And he kind of does that. So like, why don't you just stay here forever and people can come here and it's working out well for us. And Jesus tells the people of Capernaum that actually he's like, no, I got to go. I've been here long enough. I'll be back. Don't worry. But I need to go to other towns. And so he leaves. And he starts traveling from town to town to town, telling people, again, teaching people about what God was actually like. And one day, soon after this, Jesus finds himself on the shore of a huge lake. And this lake is the Sea of Galilee. I mean, it's big. And that's actually the city of Capernaum is right on the north shore of that lake. And so he's around that region. He's on the shore of the lake. He's teaching people. And there's this huge crowd that's around him. And of course, it's a very normal day for Jesus. And he's been teaching all day. And it's at the end of the day, and it's getting dark, and he is tired. Okay, it's kind of like, I feel like I can relate to this because on Sunday afternoons, after today, after four services, and then we got Connect class after that, like I'm doing a lot of talking. Like I go home and I just crash, like on the couch, you know, watching a game. There's no game today, dang it. But that's what I usually do. Like that's my thing. And I'll be honest with you, the last thing I want to do is talk. Like I'm all talked out. Okay, some of you guys do not know what that even feels like because you've never been all talked out. Like, you always have something to say. By the way, your husbands know it, okay? So, just saying. You've never gotten tired of talking, and that's cool. You're better than me, okay? I get tired of it. I think Jesus is probably tired of talking, okay? Just throwing that out there. And so he decides, hey, we're going to leave this crowd. And to get away, we're going to cross to the other side of the lake, which was quite convenient for him. And so Matthew says this. He says, as he got into the boat, his disciples, like Matthew's writing this stuff down, all right, as his disciples followed him, of course. He says, then suddenly, as they get out from shore, they're kind of like maybe halfway there to the other side of the lake. He says, a violent storm arose on the lake so that the boat was being swamped by the waves. So suddenly, this is something that happens often in this region or specifically on this lake. This was very normal. The Sea of Galilee is roughly 700 feet, think about this, below sea level. It's actually the lowest freshwater lake in the world. But 30 miles away, you got Mount Hermon, which is actually at 9,000 feet. So you have a 10,000-foot difference in elevation. And so what ends up happening is cold air from the mountains, they come down, and warm air from the basin of the lake moves up, and that creates huge storms on this lake. It's very known for this. It happens all the time. Still happens even to this day. But it's totally okay for Jesus and company because half the disciples, what do they do for a living? They're like professional fishermen. Like, this is what they do, you know? Like, they're used to boats, and all their life they've been on this lake, and they knew how the weather works, and they knew all about storms. But this particular storm is different. It's getting worse and worse, so much that the boat was being swamped by the waves. So the question is, where's Jesus? Right, where is he? Jesus is sleeping. What? All right, so ladies, let me just point this out. Like, when your husband's on the couch trying to watch the game and he falls asleep, he's just trying to be like Jesus, so just let him sleep, okay? All right, Jesus did it. We could do it too. It's okay. All right? Think about this for a second. Jesus is 100% God, okay? Meaning, he's God of the universe wrapped in a human body. But we also know that Jesus is also 100% man, and we see Jesus' humanity here. He is dead tired, and he's not waiting until they reach the shore. I mean, they're going to the shore, and they're probably going to stay somewhere, you know, on the other side of the lake for the night or whatever. He doesn't even wait. He lays down, and he falls asleep. So we got this huge storm. They're in a boat. It's not a great place to be in a storm. And the waves are coming up over the sides of the boat, and more water as it comes into the boat sinks lower and lower and lower into the lake, and they are in real trouble, and Jesus is sleeping. Mark tells us in his account of Jesus' life, he's like, yeah, he was sleeping. Jesus was in the stern, meaning in the back of the boat, sleeping on a cushion. So this is like intentional sleep. I think, you know, maybe when they got into the boat, Jesus is like, I call the cushion. All right, call it first. I've been teaching all day. I'm gonna take a nap here. It'd be kind of like for you, it's not like he just fell asleep in his chair or whatever, or seat. You know, he's like sleeping. He's got the blankets, like he's good to go. It'd be like for you if you came to church with like one of those neck pillow things. I'm just saying, I would know that you plan on taking a nap. You know, like you're not going to make it through the whole thing. Don't do that because I'll judge you for it. But Jesus, think about this. He knows the storm is coming. He knows it's coming. He's God, 100% God. But in his humanity, he's also like, yeah, but I'm exhausted. I think I'm going to take a nap. And so part of me wants to believe that maybe Jesus is doing one of those things that that we've all done as parents for sure. Like, maybe he's not actually sleeping. You know, maybe he's like laying there. You know how it is, like when it's early in the morning, maybe on Christmas Day or whatever, you know, sometimes it's just a random day. And you're laying there and your kids come barging into the room. They're loud. They're like, you know, dad, mom, whatever. And what do? You're kind of just like, I'm asleep. You just try to ignore them, try to wait it out. You know what I'm talking about. Sometimes it works. Sometimes it don't. But you're willing to try it. So you're fake sleeping. Sometimes I even do that with Kate. Okay, but maybe, you know, like we've all done that to multiple people. Don't tell her I said that. But she knows usually. She's like, Zach, I know you're awake. And I'm like, I just saw your phone light. And they're like, oh, dang it, stupid phone. But like, think about it. Maybe part of me wants to think like he's faking it. And maybe he's just like listening to them to see how they respond. Kind of sounds like a Jesus thing to do. Right? He's like testing them. All right, let's see. Huge storm. Bam. Got it going. Cue the disciples. Oh, man, they're not handling this very well, you know? But I don't think that's actually the case. Like, part of me wants to think that, but I think he's really sleeping, right? He is tired. He's just sleeping there. And so they woke him up. I bet they did. And they go to him. They're like, teacher. They're like grabbing him and shaking him. They're like, teacher, Jesus, wake up. Don't you care that we are going to die? Maybe the dumbest question they've ever asked. But isn't that how we feel sometimes? It's just true. You ever pray those prayers where you got some storm that enters your life or some situation that you got going on that you didn't expect? It just kind of pops up and it's bad. Like, you don't know how you're going to handle this. You don't know what you're going to do. You don't know what the right thing to do is. And you're just like, and it's just getting worse and worse and worse. Like, you ever kind of get to the end of your rope and you're just kind of cry out to God? We're like, God, where are you? You know, or like, God, what's going on? Hey, I know you got a lot of things going on out there and you're doing a lot of things, but like, can you just for 5 minutes take a look at my life? Can you deal with my problems? Can you fix my situation? I don't know what to do. God, do you even care? You ever feel that sometimes? By the way, notice what they're certain about in that statement. They're certain about they are going to die. They're uncertain about him caring. It's what we do. It's funny, we walk around, we're like, yeah, I trust God. Yeah, I follow Jesus. I'm a Jesus follower. Like, I got faith. I'm a man of faith. But then the minute our situation gets out of our control, what ends up happening is we allow many times fear to take over our lives and to take over our thoughts, and we become certain of that fear. And Jesus caring about me? Yeah, that's up for debate. I mean, we've been there before. That feeling, the disciples are feeling that at this moment. And so he looks at him and he says, why are you afraid? Remember, Jesus is just waking up from this nap. He's just like, are you seriously waking me up for this? He's just like, why are you afraid? You really have this little of faith? It's like Jesus is like, you don't trust me yet? You're waking me up for this storm? Did I hear this right? You're not sure if I care about you? You think like this storm is a problem for me? And I think he kind of sighs like, ugh. He stands up, kind of rubs his eyes. He's just gotten woken up. He stands up and he rebukes the winds and the lake. All right, what's that mean? Actually, in the original language, basically, he stands up, he says, be quiet and stay quiet. Total mom move. And that's what he does. And it's kind of a weird thing to say to weather, but the weather is like, okay, all right, weather fixes itself. He says, and when he did that, when he yells that out, the winds and the lake, he says, there was a great calm. Meaning it goes from huge waves crashing over the boat. All right, everybody is soaked. The boat is filling up with water. It's starting to sink. And then you got everything's chaotic. Everybody's panicking. Even the professional fishermen who knew boats and lakes and storms, they're panicking. Everybody thinks they're going to die. They got lightning. You got thunder. You got wind. They've never seen anything like this before. They wake Jesus up. Jesus stands up. He yells at the wind and yells at the storm. And instantly it's glass. It's calm. And when this happens, the men, like Matthew, who's writing this, were amazed. They never seen anything like this before. All right, even some of them that have been on the lake all their life, they're like, this is crazy. And they start asking each other, they're kind of elbowing each other, like, what kind of man is this? Who is this guy? Even the winds and the lake obeys him. Mark and Luke, in their accounts, they say the guys with Jesus, they didn't breathe a sigh of relief. They weren't just like, oh, that was crazy. Okay, Jesus, I thought we were going to die. Like that was, and some of them are going, nah, I thought we were okay. You know, I knew you were going to fix this. That was a little scary, but not that bad, you know. They're not breathing a sigh of relief. They're not like high-fiving each other and like, did you see that? Like Jesus took the wheel. Like that was crazy, you know. Like they're not saying that. Luke and Mark tells us they are terrified. You're like, what? I thought they were just saved. Yeah. their fear shifts from the storm to the guy in the back of the boat. That's what happens. And one thing scarier than a storm that can kill you is being stuck in a small boat with a person who can control a storm that can kill you. And they are even more afraid. They tell us that they're even more afraid of the storm that was going to kill them, right? They're even more afraid of Jesus. Like, their fear has just gone to a new level, but it shifts to Jesus. And it's interesting. Jesus corrects their fear of the storm. What's he say when he wakes up? He's like, are you kidding me? You're waking me up for this? He's like, don't you have any faith? He corrects them. But now that they fear Jesus, he doesn't correct them for this type of fear. I mean, these are the disciples who had seen Jesus do a bunch of stuff. This freaks them out. Huge storm, but then instantly silent, instantly glass, and they're left there looking at each other. And the rescue scared them more than the storm that was about to kill them. See, here's what you got to understand. There is one type of fear that we, as Jesus followers, are to have, and that is a fear of Jesus himself. Now, for a lot of us, the way we think, because we grow up in this culture and, you know, and everything, we don't, you know, when it comes to fear and God, like, we don't associate those two things together. It's almost like we assume for some reason that a God who should be feared is a God who is guilty of something, or a God who has done something wrong, or God who has some sort of fault, or we think like the fear of God is some leftover relic from some oppressive or archaic view of religion. We just view it as like, oh, that's just such an outdated thing. That's not how we think anymore. And when we think of Jesus, we just don't fear him. We don't think of being afraid of him. We think of Jesus like kind of meek and soft, kind of like the pictures that we all see of Jesus. Don't confuse meek with weak. It's like we've turned Jesus into a first century screensaver. It's like, you know, Jesus has got the soft lighting and the flowing hair, and he's petting lambs and hugging children, and he's got the wind machine on low. You know, like, there's Jesus doing his thing. But when you read the Bible, that's not who he is at all. When we read the Bible, I mean, he's flipping tables. He's calling out the most powerful people. He's walking straight into storms like he was the one who scheduled them. Like, that's the kind of thing that he's doing. And he has power and strength and justice. He's not a mascot. He's the king. And that should give us a sense of fear and respect towards him. In fact, I'd argue that we can't have a strong relationship unless we have a certain amount of fear of him. Those two things go hand in hand together. But when we think of Jesus, we just don't like the idea of being afraid of God. And what ends up happening is we become like a lot of the most people, like all the other people in our culture, in the fact that we start fearing our circumstances, and that's why we struggle with worrying about all the things. It's why a lot of us struggle with anxiety. What's that? That's really just being afraid of different things. We got different fears about, you know, in our life. And so we fear our circumstances, and we don't fear God. That's the problem. Jesus came on the scene. He says, no. You don't understand. You're doing this wrong. You're doing life wrong. Don't fear your circumstances. You can't control those things anyway. Fear me. And the disciples are instantly hit with that fear. I wasn't there, but I bet for the rest of the boat ride, I bet it's pretty quiet. You know, like, okay, that was crazy. And they finally get to the other side of the lake in that boat. And as they're walking up the shore, okay, this is a crazy night. It says two demon-possessed men met them as they came out of the tombs. Okay, so what's going on here? Let's talk about demon possession real quick. That's something we talk about very often. The Bible tells us that the spiritual world is very real. Okay, you could choose to believe that or not to believe that, you know, but the Bible is clear. Jesus is clear. Demons aren't like probably what we see in movies, okay? Demons are just fallen angels. Angels, demons, they are the same thing, okay? Demons have just, they're the ones who have followed Satan in a rebellion against God. And so they're not in heaven anymore. They're actually here among us. They're part of the enemy that we are spiritually, in a sense, fighting against. And so what's happening in this situation is you got a bunch of demons kind of packed into these two guys, and these demons are fully controlling them. And so controlling their thoughts, controlling, they control them, okay? And so these guys, they met them as they came out of the tombs. That's where they're, I guess, living, they're chilling. And they were so violent that no one could pass that way, meaning these guys were uncontrollable. What we find out from some of the other accounts of this situation is that they had tried to like wrap these guys up in chains and they had tried to arrest these guys and they couldn't do it. These guys almost in a sense had superhuman strength because they're demon possessed and they broke those things. And so the people of the nearby towns just had no idea what to do with these guys. Nothing had worked. So I want you to picture this in your mind. Can you picture this? At least try a little. Okay. Getting nothing out there. The disciples are getting off the boat. It's been a long night. Okay, let's just say that. It's been a long night. It was a long day before that. And the disciples are thinking like the boat ride was the story. You know, Matthew had already written that stuff down. He's like, this is crazy. I'm going to put all this together. It's going to be, you know, I'm going to make a document with this in there. This is nuts. They get off the boat, and I think, you know, things are getting a little easier or a little looser in the sense that they kind of start talking about it. Like they're not like, you know, anymore, they're like, dude, that was crazy. Did you guys see that? Like, that was nuts. And they kind of start laughing about it. They kind of start talking about it a little bit. Like, you thought you were going to die. No, you thought you were going to die. You know, and they're elbowing each other. Like, you were screaming, Peter. And I wasn't crying like that guy. You know, like they're all probably in their 20s. So you can imagine kind of how this goes. And as soon as they get kind of up on the shore and Jesus is with them, too crazy, what we're going to find out in other accounts, naked guys, they come, so don't imagine it too hard. Two crazy naked guys come running up like linebackers and they're like, ah, you know, and the disciples are like, ah, you know, like what is going on with this night? And you would think there'd be like some epic battle between, you got Jesus in one corner, you got these two guys who have demons in the other corner, they're going to break out their lightsabers and like, let's go. You know, like that's kind of what you would think. But they come and they start shouting out to Jesus. They're yelling at Jesus, what do you have to do with us? It's the demons talking, by the way. Son of God. Notice they knew exactly who Jesus was. Have you come here to torment us before the time? They're talking about a future time, by the way. So Mark and Luke, they record for us that these guys, they run at the disciples as fast as they can. But before they get there, they run to Jesus and they fall on their face before Jesus. There is no fight here. There is nothing. It's interesting because Jesus' followers are a little fuzzy on who Jesus is. What'd they just ask in the boat? Who is this guy? This guy's crazy. Did you see what he just did? The demons, they're crystal clear on who Jesus is. And so we got the disciples freaking out. You got tired Jesus. He's getting ready to help these guys. He's like, oh, okay, let me take care of this. Always something, you know. And you got these crazy demon-possessed guys on their knees. Basically, the demons inside are begging Jesus not to fight them. Okay, that's what's going on. And all this is probably happening in the middle of the night, just to make it even weirder. Now, Matthew writes, he lets us know. He says, a long way off from them, there was a large herd of pigs that was feeding. Okay. And so these demons are yelling out. They're like, if you drive us out, they're talking to Jesus. They say, if you rescue these two men that we are possessing right now by kicking us out of them, they said, please, please, Jesus, they're begging him, send us into the herd of pigs. Like, don't send us to hell or prison or whatever. They're like, just send us into the pigs. It's funny because these demons are begging Jesus to run away. Please let us run away from you. All right, please let us get away. These demons are obviously evil, okay? But they got one thing right that we usually get wrong. They fear him, as we should. And Jesus looks at these two guys and he says, go. Get out of here. So when they had come out, the demons, they entered the pigs and the whole herd rushed down the steep bank into the lake and they all drowned in the water. They're like, what? There's a lot that happened right there. And then the men who tended them fled. I bet they did. Okay, can you imagine being these guys? Their job is to watch over the pigs. Probably, I'm assuming, not much is going on in the middle of the night with pigs, right? Right by the lake, it's not like they can go many places, you know, kind of acts as a natural barrier. These guys, they're just kind of hanging out. The pigs are fine. Everything's good. You got this boat kind of pulls up on shore. About 13 guys get out of this boat, and then they're like, oh, man, this is going to be crazy because that's right next to the cemetery where those demon-possessed guys live. And so we're about to see, oh, there they go. These demon-possessed guys come running at that group, and they're kind of, the guys tending the pigs are kind of off in the distance. They're only maybe seeing like shadows and stuff because it's late at night or early in the morning. And they run to those guys, but there's no fight. And all of a sudden, those guys are like totally fine and normal and in their right mind. And then all their pigs that they're supposed to be watching, they run down a bank into the lake and drown. That's weird, right? I mean, like, and they're like, what are we gonna do? They lost their jobs right there. And so they went into the city and they reported everything. They're like, guys, you wouldn't believe us, but like, we're watching the pigs. All the pigs are dead. Like, they're all floating there in the lake. Like, it's crazy. You should come see. And they especially reported what happened to those who were demon-possessed. Remember, the town had already tried to help these guys and, like, control these guys unsuccessfully. At that, the whole town went out to meet Jesus. Everybody's like, I'm going to go. All right, I'm going to go see what's going on with this Jesus guy. And when they saw him, the saddest part, they begged him to leave their region. I mean, you'd think they'd want Jesus to stick around. Like the people of Capernaum. I mean, like, yo, Jesus, while you're here, can you check out my uncle? Like, there's something wrong with that guy, too. I don't know if it's demon possession, but it's close, you know? Like, check that guy out. Or like, Jesus, I got this, like, growth thing on my back. It appeared, like, 6 months ago. Can you, like, you see that? Can you, like, zap that or do whatever you do? You would think they'd be doing stuff like that. But Luke tells us, in his account, now they were terrified. Most scholars believe that they weren't necessarily in fear of Jesus, but were fearing the loss of their property. I mean, the whole herd had already, was dead. And they don't want that happening again. You know, they're looking at Jesus, and they're viewing Jesus as a liability for them. I don't want him around. He might mess something else up. And so what are they doing? They're doing exactly what we do. They fear their circumstances more than they fear Jesus. And in their fear of losing more stuff, you ever struggle with that? They completely overlook the two guys who Jesus saved. They miss the miracle here. They completely miss it. I mean, these two guys who were isolated in constant sadness, no peace, no control, couldn't even control what they did. Jesus comes, he sets them free. It shows a combination of his power and his love. God of the universe came to visit this town on this particular day, but because of fear of their circumstances, they completely miss it. And they're like, we don't want you here. Please leave. And Jesus says, okay. And they left. They get back in the boat, and they head back home. I imagine in that boat ride, that there's probably no small talk, no jokes, nobody asking what's for breakfast, anything like that. I bet they can't stop thinking about the night. You know, first you got the storm. That was crazy. But then you got the demon-possessed guys. That was crazy too. And in the middle, you got Jesus doing all this stuff. And they are filled with awe and wonder, but also filled with fear. But this time, they're not fearing their circumstances. They're fearing the man in the back of the boat, knowing that he's so powerful, that he's so dangerous, that he is not safe, but knowing he's also so good. Fear of Jesus leads to relationship. It leads to obedience. Fear of our circumstances, well, that leads to missing out on the life that God has created you for. Leads to missing out on the relationship with your creator. It leads to missing out on the freedom that God came to give you. The freedom that cost him. The freedom that he died to give you. It's a big deal. And so as you go through life, so many of us in this room, we have so much fear over all the little things that are going on. Some of the things that we worry about, some of the things that we have fear about haven't even happened yet. It's like, we worry about things that could potentially, if everything lined up, could happen. And Jesus comes on the scene. He's like, no, that's not how you are to live. That's not what I want from you. That's not how I design life. You don't have to be afraid of all the little things. You don't have to be afraid of all the little things going on in your life and your circumstances. Jesus is the only one worthy of our fear. We'll talk about what happens next week. Let's pray. Dear God, we thank you for telling us the story. It really is an eye-opener for a lot of us Because every single person in this room, we all struggle with fear. We all struggle with worry and anxiety. It's all fear. It's all the same thing. But you have called us not to live this way. That's not what you want for us. You want to set us free from that. And part of it is on us. God, we have to choose to not allow fear to take over different areas of our life. We don't have to live like that because you came in to set us free. And Lord, you are the only one worthy of our fear. Help us to remember that. Lord, we need your help. We thank you for coming and dying for us and setting us free in that way. God, we thank you for everything. We ask this in Jesus' name. Amen.